Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly entertainment podcast available at thehollywoodoutsider.com, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. My name is Aaron Peterson, and I'm going to be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. Every once in a while, we like to bring interviews with independent filmmakers to give you an insight into both what goes into getting their projects made, as well as insight into the respective art itself. For this episode, I am speaking with Josh Stewart, the writer and director of the new film, Back Fork. Set in West Virginia, Back Fork takes a very brutal look at the opioid crisis that's affecting millions of people every single day. Josh Stewart stars as Waylon, with AJ Cook as Nita, a married couple dealing with an overwhelming tragedy. When coping proves impossible, pills find their way into their lives to dull the pain. When Waylon finds himself in a place he never thought possible, he is forced to face his inner demons or surrender to the pills forever. Now, Back Fork is available on video on demand right now, so you can watch it as you're listening to this, or after you listen to this, or before you, whatever you want to do. There's no spoilers here. But I wanted to talk to Josh because it's a film that I haven't seen him tell. He's been prominent in film and television for years, and he's an actor I've been a fan of for years. You've seen him in films like The Collector, The Dark Knight Rises, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, as well as numerous TV projects like Criminal Minds, Dirt, most recently Shooter, and as that viciously likable foe John Pilgrim in the last season of The Punisher. But he's also a writer and director. Josh first tackled directing with his found footage project, The Hunted, revolving around a pair of hunters trapped in the West Virginia mountains with an unseen force. With this latest film, Back Fork, he returns to West Virginia and takes on a much more serious horror, opioid addiction. For this interview, Josh took some time to call in and discuss his career, why he wanted to tell this story, and why he loves shooting in West Virginia. Now, as I said, the film also stars AJ Cook as Nita, Agnes Bruckner as his sister Raylene, and Wade Williams as a drug dealer Cotton. It is an intense film. It is available right now on video on demand, so you can watch it right now. Be mindful that this is a phone interview, so audio isn't always perfection. But without further ado, take a listen to my interview with the writer, director, and star of Back Fork, Josh Stewart.
Aaron, hey, this is Josh Stewart. How are you, brother?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. All is well.
I feel like I've seen you at least 40 hours this year between television and film. I feel like everywhere I turn, there's Josh Stewart.
Hey, that's too much for anyone, brother. No. I'm sorry about that.
No, nothing to apologize for. I actually enjoy it. I'll talk about it in a little bit. First thing I ask anybody is, when did you know you wanted to get involved in filmmaking? Was there like a specific moment for you?
No, you know what, man? I'm not one of those people who grew up wanting to be an actor, anything like that. I was in school at West Virginia University studying business. I was in business school there. I just didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, and the only thing I was learning in business school was that's not what I wanted to do. And just by chance, I had done a play in a community theater company for the first time. I grew up playing sports, and you know, theater and acting was nothing that was ever on my radar. And I don't know how, but my speech teacher from high school, who was involved in a community theater company, wrangled me into it in college, and for the first time, something made sense to me. And that was it. Finished school, packed up, moved to New York City, and started studying acting.
And I read, you tell me if this is correct, your father was a Baptist preacher?
Yep, still is. He's a Baptist minister. Yep, was a school teacher. My mother's still a school teacher. And yeah, man.
Wow.
All the way around.
That's great. My grandfather was a preacher, Baptist preacher, so small world.
Oh, yeah, man.
How did you get your start in Hollywood specifically? I mean, you found the bug, the itch, you wanted to scratch it. So how do you end up finding your break in Hollywood?
Well, I moved to New York and studied acting for a while. Then I packed up and moved to Los Angeles. And was out here and just started auditioning, and I auditioned for about, a year and a half. And then, you know, I got a TV show called Third Watch.
Mm-hmm.
So packed back up and moved back to New York City to do that television show, and that was it, man. You know, I got fairly lucky from that standpoint. It caught right away, I guess, fairly quickly into the game for me, and then it's just been nonstop ever since.
Yeah, we're going to come back to some of that early break because it kind of ties into your moves as a director. But I watch a lot of movies. And because of that, sometimes the line can get blurred as to when you first start noticing certain actors because there's so much work out there.
Right.
But I'm not making this up. I still to this day remember when I started keeping an eye out for your work, and I went to the theater to see this low-budget horror flick called The Collector.
Oh, yeah, man.
And I walked out of that because you walk in, it's a clever hook. It's a real clever hook for a movie.
Right.
But the reason that entire movie works is because you had a way of making a character that kind of we shouldn't like in a way become a hero. And you really broke out for me in that role. I'm kind of wondering, was that your big break to kind of move forward?
You know, that was the first film that I had done that I was the first movie on a studio level, I guess I should say that I was the lead of. Mm-hmm. That was made by Dimension, by the Weinstein brothers. Mm-hmm. And after the movie was in the can, the Weinstein brothers were going bankrupt. And they were basically, you know, I've heard many variations of the story, but basically they had, you know, this collection of movies that were in the can that weren't released yet. And they sold it back to the producers for what they paid to make it, and they released it. Hmm. The producers released it. And, that was it. That movie sort of took on a whole life, you know, on the DVD digital download world, and, you know, and the rest is sort of history, I guess.
Well, I saw it in the theater, so I'm one of the dedicated ones, I guess.
There you go. There you go.
A couple more questions, then we'll get to Back Fork. It takes a lot to win people over, I think, to the perceived villain side. I mean, I still hate Jaime Lannister in Game of Thrones, but you did this in The Collector to a lesser degree, but Punisher, Shooter, you made characters who people became sympathetic to. And I'm kind of wondering, do you feel like you have a knack for redeeming the unredeemable?
Well, you know, look, man, I think it's just in the way that I was taught and to approach anything. You know, I don't care what character you're playing. They're all human beings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, I guess there are some people who are just born with inherently an evil in them. But, you know, there are plenty of good people that get caught up in circumstance and get caught up in bad situations or, you know, are just in a position where they've got to do something that maybe they shouldn't be doing out of desperation or greed or whatever the case is. And they end up down that road. And, you know, when I'm approaching a character, I've got to figure out who the human is first. With bad guys, a lot of times it's just on the page that they're bad. Yeah, that can be interesting. But, it's no different than the way I approach any character. It's like, what is it that makes this person tick? Why are they reacting in this story in this way? What's making them behave this way? What led up to this? What was the 35 years prior to meeting John Pilgrim in The Punisher, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
What was the 35 years of Solotov before we meet up with him in Shooter? You know, he's a person. He's a dude. What happened? Where did the wires get crossed? You know, and it's going to that place that enables me to do my job as an actor. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So for me to keep it interesting for myself and to do the best I can, it's like I've got to humanize them. You know what I mean? And sometimes when they're just purely evil for pure evil's sake, you still do that homework because inherently it just helps me. It just helps to inform me about who this person is and what I need to do, whether that's something we see on screen or not. That's just going to come out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's where, to me, where the fun lies.
So did you know going into, take, for instance, The Punisher, did you know the full arc when you took the character, or did it kind of develop based on your technique?
Now, I'm sure that they had the full arc sort of mapped out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know that they had the arc mapped out, but that was nothing, you know, that I was privy to going into it. I knew what the way he was introduced and what he was about, and I knew his background. But, you know, they were pretty tight-lipped about what they were sharing with us,
right?
Or what they were sharing with me about where it was going to go. You know, it seems like these higher-profile shows, the less you know about everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that.
So to me, it that's why, you know, that's when I really rely on that other thing. You know what I mean? Because whether it's a good guy, bad guy, a clown, or not, a cop, whatever it is, he's a human being, and to bring that to life, I've got to know who that human is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And by the end of that, I was, if they had gone to season three, I was really hoping John Pilgrim would come back or get a spinoff. I don't know, but
yeah, man, you know, it's always that crazy thing, right? It's, you start down that road and more starts to unfold and develop. And, you never know how much of that is because of you or what you were doing or planned or what, or not planned or whatever the case is. But I just felt like there was so much story to that dude that was being left on the table. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So much of where he came from, you know, running an Aryan kill squad to ending up to, you know, where he was, and then running back into them and, you know, in one encounter, basically. Yeah, I mean, to me, there was just a ton of story there to tell.
That character is just, it's probably one of my favorite characters of the last year or two in television. It's just such an arc, such a beautiful arc.
Thank you, man.
So Back Fork, it's your second at-back directing, and teacher-wise, you hit the ground running pretty early in your career because you worked with David Fincher and Christopher Nolan several times.
Right.
You were the voice of Casey, if people didn't know that, in Interstellar.
Right.
Those are just the big names we know. So what directors for you have been the most instrumental for you in terms of learning the craft or inspiring you to do it yourself?
Well, you know, you bring up The Collector. I've done The Collector, The Collection, and The Neighbor with Marcus Dunstan.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a dude who believed in me. He's one of the first dudes who believed in me. And the energy that guy has is just infectious. Whether you're on hour one or hour 18 of a day that's just gone tits up in every possible way, that man has the same energy, the same attitude, which is nothing but laughs and smiles and hugs. You know what I mean? To a cat named Chad Feehan, who I worked with, who is one of my best friends now. I mean, worked with him early on in a film called Beneath the Dark. You know, there's just so many. David Michaud, F. Gary Gray. They all have, they're all kind of like the characters I play. It's hard to pick a favorite or what one did, and they all mean something in some capacity. You know what I mean? They all stand out in their own way. And the numerous directors I've worked with in television, you know, so many great ones, so many that have been around and done it for so long that, you know, that just have this perspective on life that can't be duplicated, which is what makes them who they are and the artists they are.
TV directors really are unappreciated in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah, man. This is the most thankless job in the business.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, a director comes onto a TV show and most of the actors, most of the time, don't want to hear a word from them. It's like, who are you? You're a guest here. You don't know my character. I'm here playing this character 20 episodes a season. You're here for an hour.
Right.
So you put the camera where you want it, and I'm going to do my thing, and you do your thing, and leave me alone. You know, now that's a generalization, but there's, you know, that happens.
Yeah,
it definitely happens.
I can imagine. I mean, you think about it, if you're whatever your regular job is, it's the same thing. Someone comes in off the street telling you how to do your job. I kind of get both sides to that one.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, look, you know, I think it's pretty indicative of the business now.
Mm-hmm.
I do not. I'm a person, unless you are David Fincher or Chris Nolan or a Terrence Malick or one of these types of dudes. Film business is not a director's medium, brother. It's a producer's medium. It's a studio medium. It's a network medium. You're making their picture. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You're bringing their vision to life. It's not that there's this vision that they're now going to entrust you with to go and do. It's like, you know, look, man, I've been in the movies that you go and you do it, and it's like, okay, cool, this is the script. Wait a second, what's this on the screen? Well, the studio wanted this, studio wanted that, they wanted to do this, they wanted to do that. And you're like, well, they said yes to the script, man.
Mm-hmm.
They said yes to hire you. You know what I mean? So I'm a firm believer that there's really very few directors in the business today that get to do what they want to do and bring their vision to life. You know, I'm a firm believer that this has become a producer's and studio and network medium.
Well, you found a way. And your movie is, Honestly, it's I would imagine a very hard movie to make because it's a very dour subject, but necessary story revolving around opioid addiction. Why that story? Why was that so important for you to tell?
You know, to be honest with you, man, character-driven dramas are just more, you know, that's what interests me the most. You know, look, if you go to the theater, what's playing at your local theater right now? It's either a superhero movie, a comedy.
Yeah.
Or a horror movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are, and look, that's just the way it is. So, you know, most of our resumes reflect those types of things, those types of films. But I think true storytellers want to tell really good, interesting stories. And it's nothing more than, you know, it's that old adage of you go do two for them and do one for you. You know.
There's truth to it then, huh?
Yeah, there is. You know, it's like, you know, being an actor, I've always said, is like being in a great cover band. You get to go play someone else's music every night. That's wonderful. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But we all want to play our own music. We all want to tell our own stories. So that's just what this is, you know. And look, there were sacrifices that were made with this. You know, I took a smaller budget and did a few other things, but that was just so I could keep control of the film. I had 100% creative control of this thing. I had the final say on everything, on casting, script, the way it was shot, the way the final edit, everything. You know what I mean? Everything was left to me on the creative side of it. Which, you know, at this point, if I'm going to go and make a movie that I'm going to direct, it would be silly not to do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But that also comes with the type of movie it is. There's not explosions. There's not car chases. There's not a fucking robot flying out of the sky. I mean, you know what I mean? So it's people talking. You know what I mean? It's things that can be done on a scale and on a budget that's manageable.
Would have been kind of crazy if he was on a trip and at some point a robot came flying over him.
Listen, man, I had all kinds of shit thrown at me. You'd have no idea, man.
So is there anything you learned either in the writing process or during filming about opioids that really shocked you or surprised you, or has this touched you personally in some way?
Well, look, man, you know, growing up in West Virginia, you know, it's been all over the news for years and years. You know, that region is ground zero for all this, for whatever reason, you know, a lot of manual laborers, and they bang their bodies up. They need pain pills. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it was just an easy, I think, sort of target in a lot of ways, you know, some by innocent means and I guess some by not so innocent means. You know, I'm not one to get political or be all turn into an activist about it in any stretch of the imagination. But I don't think it's any coincidence that, you know, big pharmaceutical companies are now having to pay huge settlements to these communities and to these people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you want to buy pot, you go buy pot, and you get pot from a dealer, right? And that dealer buys it from a grower, right? I mean, so to me, it's like if you're buying prescription pills, there's only one way you can get to that. So to me, it's like I don't know what the answer is. I just know it's probably a result of, like I said, of some innocent by innocent means, but then again, you know, they're coming from one place, so the area has become too gray. There's a whole, you know, the waters have become so muddied. Who knows? But something needs to happen. You know what I mean? But, you know, beyond that, I don't know anyone that addiction hasn't touched in some capacity, whether personally, you know, a family member, friend, whatever the case is. It's something that's become commonplace throughout this country, no matter where you're at.
Your character, Waylon, and obviously Nita to a lesser degree, but really Waylon and Raylene kind of go through the just hell. He has the worst year ever. And the sad part is I know people that have had a year that rough. So
right.
It's not even a stretch.
Right.
And what he's trying to do is just piece his life together. As you're playing this particular part, I mean, it's so dire in many aspects. Did you have to go through, especially, you know, when you're dealing with drug addiction and withdrawal and everything else, did you have to put yourself, go do research for this? Did you have to prepare? How did you prepare for that particular aspect of the role?
You know, I'm not big on talking about process just from the standpoint of, look, I learned a long time ago as an actor, the only thing that I could control was between action and cut.
Mm-hmm.
And once cut is called and it goes to the editing room, you've got an editor, you've got producers, you've got a director, you've got studio network, all these people that are going to manipulate what has happened to fit into the narrative that they're trying to create, right?
Right.
So getting attached to it or sharing or oversharing of like what this meant to me and then while I was filming it and then what ends up on the screen end up to be two different things. Or the simple fact of like what it means to me and what I'm doing, you know, is not necessarily, doesn't necessarily have to connect the dots to what you see or you're feeling when it happens, when you're witnessing it or you're experiencing it through watching it in the theater or in your living room. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's something I've always left out of it just because, that's mine and that's what I do is what I do and that's mine. To me, that just opens up a freedom to let people take from it what they want to take from it or what they're going to take from it without it being influenced or feel like, well, I got the wrong impression about that. Because, you know, to me, it's really no different than looking at a painting on the wall. You ask 100 people what they think of it, they will give you 100 different answers. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But,
I do.
You know, a little I can give you is that, yeah, I mean, I've been around it. I've seen it. Growing up back that way, certainly it was not happening back in West Virginia when I was a kid growing up. You know, this was something that came on much later. But like I said, you know, you're hard-pressed to find anybody that doesn't have some story about addiction. Again, whether that's personally, and I've not suffered from it personally myself, but, you know, we all know someone.
Right.
You know what I mean? We've all come across someone who, you know, alcoholics, drug addicts, whatever it is, we've all seen it. You know what I mean? And, I mean, as an actor, yeah, it's like, you know, to do my job, I've got to go and figure that out. And whether that's, you know, speaking to someone, looking it up on the computer, anything and every, by all means. And I'm not a method actor. I'm not one of these dudes that goes and lives it and does all that nonsense because, I mean, who would want to spend a month of their life playing this character having to put yourself in that position? You know what I mean? It's like, hey, listen, whatever you got to do it, that's up to you. But, you know, that's never been my thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I think writing the material, you know, as an actor, all your work is figuring out the story and figuring out your character and how your character fits into that story, right? So in the writing process, the story gets flushed out and the character gets flushed out. So from an acting standpoint, my job is done, almost. From the prep standpoint, then it's just time to show up and do it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So in the writing process, when I'm watching videos of people or I'm speaking to people in getting the script right, that's also informing what I'm going to be doing as an actor on the day.
Well, you talked about moments. This is more of just a statement. There's a moment in the film that hit me particularly hard. I won't spoil it for anyone, but there's a moment between Waylon and his dad where there's two men who realize that they're kind of awful at communication.
Right.
And it's very reminiscent to, in my opinion, how a lot of men are, because we're raised that way. We bury things instead of discussing them. And there's no real question here. I just kind of wanted to say thanks for putting that in there, because it really felt like the rare, honest moment of a father and son, my experience for the father and son relationship can be.
Yeah, so, man. Yeah. Look, I don't know where you grew up, but, you know, growing up back in West Virginia, and look, and this is not an indictment on anybody. It's
right.
Just the way we're all raised. I mean, men are protectors and they're providers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just what it is. You've got to hold it together. You hold it together for the family. The mother is the person who runs the show. You know, the mother in the family is the one who, I mean, is on the front lines on the daily, dealing with everything and keeping the house together. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I who knows how that started and where it all came from, but it's almost like that became sort of the way for men to excuse having to have a conversation about feelings or having to have feelings. You know what I mean? It's sort of just like this removed thing. And it's like, you know, it's just not necessary, and it doesn't serve anyone. You know, and mostly for me, when I was writing this, I've got two kids. It's everything, you know, in that scene and throughout the movie is everything that I don't want to be to them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
I don't want to be that person who's closed off or doesn't communicate about those things or talk about those things until it becomes dire. Because once it gets to the point of being dire, then we're all done to begin with, you know, from the jump. You know what I mean? And maybe communication and feelings could have prevented a lot of that. You know, I always tell my kids that it's all right to be sad, it's all right to be upset, it's all right to get hurt, and it's all right to cry. You know, it's never not all right just to put it all inside of you and hold it. It's mm-hmm. never all right to take that out on other people. You have to know that everyone has the feelings and has emotions, and you have to know that it's all right to talk about them, whether you're a man or a woman.
Well, it's a beautiful moment in the movie. Truly.
Thank you.
Real quick, I know you've worked with A.J. Cook on Criminal Minds. How did you know she was the right fit here? Or is this like the Criminal Minds, the later years?
It's like the reunion, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you know, I've known AJ and worked with her for years and years, and anytime that's the case, there's just a familiarity when it comes to work where you sort of just start to pick up on their instinct as an actor or the way they go about things, the way that they will approach a scene, the way just everything, you know what I mean? It's no different than having a friend that you're around all the time and you know how they're going to react in a situation. There's just a familiarity there on a level of from that standpoint. Now, there's not a lot of moments in the script in this film where they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
But that familiarity needs to come across without seeing it in scenes. We need to know that these people know one another, you know, and they're on the same page, but they're just completely in different stories at the moment. So just the years of experience of working on Criminal Minds with her, it just made it an easy choice for that. You know, it made her an easy choice for that character. I knew what she would bring to it, and more importantly, given the schedule, given our budget and what the schedule was, I knew she would deliver, and I knew it would be there, and we could knock it out.
And it was great to see another side of her, too.
Right.
And right. How about Agnes Bruckner? Because she's kind of playing your mirror in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah, man. You know, the crazy thing is the first draft of this script, when I was working on it, that character was a brother. And to me, it just didn't ring true. It's like, no, this has to be a sister.
Mm-hmm.
But they are the same. You know, they completely are. And I mean, with Agnes, you know, it was nothing. She's not someone I had thought of or anything like that. You know, I completely created that character with no one in mind, and that was just the casting director, Lorraine Mayfield, who said, I sent her the script, and I think you need to go meet with her. And I met with her, and that was it.
Here's what I want to say. This is the second film you've shot in West Virginia.
Yeah.
Do you feel more comfortable telling stories there, or do you just kind of want to bring a little bit of Hollywood back to your home?
You know, look, man, I think there's a few different things. West Virginia is full of storytellers, man. You know, you sit around a campfire, everybody's going to pull a story or two out of their pocket. That's just the way it is. You know what I mean? There's great musicians back that way. There's great artisans. It's just something that's not thought about in that region for that reason. But two, I guess we write about what we know, right? We write about the people we know, the places we know, the stories we know. So there's a little bit of that. And, you know, to me, it's completely, from a cinematic standpoint, an untapped place when it comes to film. You know, you can't walk into a building in downtown Los Angeles without recognizing a building from 50 movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But that's just not the case back that way. It's so untouched when it comes to the cinematic world. And, you know, there's just a richness back there that's unique to that place. That puts just a unique perspective on the stories that come from there. And to me, you know, and maybe, look, I'm biased, and maybe it's because I'm from there, but there's just a richness that you don't see in other places. And again, I mean, it's what I know, It's what I've grown up in. It's what I've seen. So I think there's just a comfort level with that. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it is. It's going home for the holidays type of thing.
Was this a particularly difficult movie to get made? Because a lot of independent films have a journey. What was your journey for Back Fork?
Yeah, man. I mean, look, it was rough. Everyone responded to the script pretty much right away. You know, but there was the typical, you know, look, man, I knew I was making an art house movie. I knew what the challenges were going to be with someone wanting to put up money to go make it. Because at the end of it, how many people really turn up to see those things?
Right.
From a business standpoint, I understand it. So I knew it was going to be a song and dance, and the companies that were really interested in making it, you know, it was, you know the way this business works. It's like a production company will have a slate of films for the next 3 years already filled. So it was getting a lot of, well, you know, we're interested in making this, but we're 2 years away. We're 3 years away from being able to film it. So that was nothing I was interested in doing, but because of the relevance of the, you know, of the situation of what's happening around the country with opioids, it was like, you know, I didn't want to sit and wait, and mm-hmm. you know, the right circumstance just came along, and I had somebody that wanted to make the movie, and he was gonna, you know, he allowed me to make the movie I wanted to make without any sort of interruptions or interference from any angle, and he said, here it is, go make it, and we'll see what happens.
You know, with a film like this, a lot of times the filmmaker wants people to kind of walk away with something. Is there any particular, I don't want to say message, because I don't really feel like it's a message movie so much as it is, it's just more of a spotlight on real situations, but is there anything you want audiences to walk away from when they're done with Back Fork?
No, you know, the only thing I can ever hope for in anything I do, whether that's acting or writing or directing or all the above or whatever, is that people walk away with the feeling that we've brought to life a story and characters in the most truthful way we can. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I want to create stories and characters that are relatable on a basic level to anyone. And look, you know, someone from Chicago or someone from wherever may have no idea about West Virginia other than what they read in the papers when a coal mine explodes or when, you know, they've got three times the level of OD rate than anywhere in the country when it comes to this stuff. But you can relate to loss, you can relate to addiction, you can relate to despair, and you can relate to hope, and you can relate to good people trying to help those people out of those places and give them hope. You know, that's the only thing I could really ask for, and really the only thing that I try to do when I'm working, you know, even when I'm playing the bad guy, is that I'm bringing a truth to something that someone can relate to on some sort of basic level. We may not be able to understand how they got there. We may not be able to understand why they're making the choices they make, but on a basic level, that they are relatable and it's truthful. Because if it's not truthful, you know, just as much as I'm not honoring the character of John Pilgrim, if I'm not being truthful, I'm really not honoring the people who are going through and who have suffered and who will suffer from this disease if I'm not.
It's a beautiful way to put it.
Thank you, man.
Last question. A lot of actors kind of segue into direction. Clint Eastwood, Rob Reiner. Was that a difficult transition for you at all? Did you ever just grab a mirror and just yell motivations at yourself?
No, man, you know, it was, I think the way that I was taught to act was, approaching a story from the outside in. If you can't step back and see the picture as a whole and understand the story as a whole, then mm-hmm. I can't understand how my part fits into it. It's like a puzzle, right? There's 500 pieces to the puzzle. If I can't see the whole picture, if I can't look at the box, the cover box of the puzzle and see what the picture is, it's hard to imagine where your little piece goes in that big collage. You know what I mean? So understanding the whole picture so I can understand how my piece fits into that picture is how I was taught to approach it. And that seems like an easy sort of transition over from to the direction side of understanding the story as a whole, understanding it from a greater scale, and then closing in on each little individual piece the same way that I would as a, you know, from an actor approaching a character. That was just the way I was taught to approach a character from start in New York City, you know. So I think it just sort of lent itself to that. And, you know, again, it's just always something that I think I've always done. I consider myself more of a writer than anything.
Mm-hmm.
I know my credits don't back that assertion up, but I think all storytellers are writers, and that's just always been my thing, man. And I've always been, you know, I've always looked forward to playing my own music. Like I said before, there are stories inside of me I want to tell, and it's just time to go do it.
Yeah, we keep at it. This, I mean, seriously, this is a really, it's, I don't want to say it's not joyful.
Anyway, no, it's not.
No, but it is, I mean, it's heartwarming in a way, and in its own way, in its own unique way.
Well, again, yeah, man, I mean, look, I wanted to show it for what it is. I wanted to be truthful about what it is. That, mm-hmm. You know, you can't pussyfoot around a subject matter like this, or you're just going to make a stupid, you're going to tell a stupid story. You know what I mean? The people who have seen it, who have lived through it, are just going to call BS on you. You know what I mean? And at the end of it, do you want to kind of paint a picture, or do you want to paint the picture?
Absolutely.
So it was either all the way or nothing, one way or the other. Just like if I were going to write and direct a comedy, it's either all of it or it's nothing. You know, a film like this, I think there are so many of the stereotypical acting traps, filmmaking traps, and everything that you can fall into, and it just becoming a melodrama beyond all belief and an after-school special if you half-ass it.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, no, you got to go for it. It has to be what it really is. It has to be doctors selling prescriptions for a certain amount of money. It has to be what people are doing with their bodies to get what they need to keep their bodies moving. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It has to be all of it. If it's not truth, then there, to me, there's just no point in doing it. I'd rather go fly fishing.
Well, there's a lot of that in there. There's a scene with Wade Williams where I won't say what happens, but the whole time I'm watching, I'm like, oh no, oh, what's going to happen?
Oh yeah. And listen, man, there's not a story, there's not a scene or a circumstance or a situation in the script that I haven't either seen or been told firsthand about.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. That's the way it is, man. You know what I mean? It's either all of it, again, it's either all of it or nothing. It's either full on, head on, or again, I'd rather go fly fishing.
And that's Back Fork, which is on video on demand right now. It's on VOD right now, so people can watch it. What's next for you? What do you? I saw Lewis and Clark.
But that is done at the moment.
Okay.
That is not moving forward. But, you know, now that this thing is out, I've got a few more days of press and all that sort of thing, and then it's figuring out what the next thing is, man.
Well, Disney Plus is, like, doing their thing. You could do a John Pilgrim spinoff. I'm still going to push for that.
Hey, listen, if Disney is willing to turn John Pilgrim loose, then I'm all for it. I'm not so sure that meets their demographic, though.
I think it'd be great. And hey, that's not technically the Punisher, so I think they could start that right now.
That's right.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. I really appreciate you stopping by, sincerely. And the movie is really good, and really, it's really deep. It's really, I hate to use that word because I feel like it gets overused, but it is it's a very heartfelt depth of work.
I really appreciate it, brother.
All right. Well, good luck on the release, and we'll see you on the next thing. I feel like you're going to be popping up anytime.
All right. Thank you, my man.
There you go. That was Josh Stewart. What a great guy, right? What a great guy. And if you have not seen Shooter, Punisher, or all the stuff that I talked about, especially The Collector, I love that movie. Be sure to check him out. But of all those, Back Fork. Check out Back Fork. It's now available. Video on demand. You can find it at home in the comfort of your own couch. And you can see that the man has talent, and I want to see what he brings to the screen next. Once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. We try to bring you interviews with filmmakers in the world of independent cinema whenever we can, so I really hope you enjoyed this one. Remember to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, your podcast app of choice. Our normal show has a new episode every single week and is available at thehollywoodoutsider.com as well as all those other places I mentioned. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater or sit comfortably on your couch, and watch Back Fork, buy popcorn.